411 Live.
Well, you can learn about issues that affect us every day.
Real people, real talk.
Made to help people in our community in every way. For your girl.
Hello, I'm Beverly Taylor, and this is the 411 Live. Real people, real talk. We've just wrapped up season 8, and you know what that means. It's time to give you the rundown of what we've been chatting about all season long. Over the next 3 episodes, we're serving up snippets of the 20 episodes that made this season special. Stay tuned for a mix of topics that hit close to home. Meet some fascinating folks you'll be excited to get to know, and catch some info that might just make a positive impact in your life. Okay, let's begin with episode 1 of season 8, The Spread of Violence, Understanding Violence as a Communicable Disease. In this episode, David Muhammad, Deputy Director of the Milwaukee County Department of Health and Human Services, dives into the impact of violence on youth and breaks down how it can spread from person to person and affect entire communities like a communicable disease. However, there's an upside to this. We're not just dwelling on the negatives. We're also digging into how we can team up and make our neighborhood safer and more peaceful for everyone.
When we talk about it from the lens of Milwaukee and looking at neighborhoods and communities, when we see disinvestment in a neighborhood, when we see institutions in those neighborhoods that are going away, taken away, or are under-resourced, you start to see community life break up. When you see families under great economic and social pressure, you see that acted out in ways that express anger and frustration, or even in many respects, self-treatment. We can look at drugs as a form of self-prescribing, whether that's alcohol or other types of hard drugs. Mm-hmm. And people are coping in various ways that can be self-destructive. And so when people express that frustration in unregulated emotional ways, it can erupt in violence. So all violence is really a retaliatory response to feeling unheard, disconnected, unloved, disrespected, or vulnerable. And when you put it in that context, whatever means or methods people have, whether it's a gun, whether it's a hand, whether it's abusive language, all of that can take on the form of violence. But it all comes from a level of violence which is disinvesting in neighborhoods and communities and destroying families.
Yeah, yeah. When we talk about the young people, and, you know, in the news, young people are associated with the stolen cars.
Sure.
And we had, a mother on the 411 Live not too long ago. Her daughter was, you know, in a stolen car with the kids, and she was hurt.
Absolutely.
I mean, in intensive care, and couldn't talk. But she was able to kind of motion. And her mom asked her, you know, you going to keep on stealing these cars? Mm. And she said, yes. And then her mother reminded her of the consequences and, you know, of those actions. And then she said no. A lot of people are out there who just say, but these young people who are doing these things, just lock them up. Lock them all up. Mm. Why is that a bad idea?
Well, I think anytime somebody is a threat to themselves and to the general public, there should be a place for them to be rehabilitated. The fact remains that even though we have places like that, rehabilitation hasn't worked. And if it did, Milwaukee would be one of the safest places because we incarcerate have some of the largest incarceration numbers of Black males, particularly. Given the example that you cited, what you're looking at is high-risk behavior, and there's a level of adrenaline and risk associated with that than you and I probably had a different way or a different outlet to express or have. And then this generation of young people engaging in that kind of behavior, it doesn't make sense to us, but I'd say maybe 15 years ago, the smash and grab in the malls didn't make sense to us either, or some of those other things that young people were doing. And you know, stealing a car only to crash it and jump out of it, or drive it in a haphazard way with your friends recording it doesn't seem like something that would make sense. But when you're looking at young people who are disengaged, who are undersupervised, and there's a lack of resources, they're making probably the most self-destructive choice they could make. But it didn't happen in a vacuum. And I would kind of like to share with the audience where I see that this behavior has evolved over time.
Please
do. If it's possible. Well, a couple of things. There's policy points that you can identify where trends start. And so we can say, well, there's a viral trend about Kia or Hyundai, all right? But I remember when, maybe around 2015, the police department got in some trouble, 2015, 2016, 2017, for traffic stops. And in the street of Center Street, there were about 20,000 stops in Milwaukee. About 7,500 of them just happened on Center Street. So there was a lot of focused policing in a certain area under the guise of traffic stops, but effectively it was racial profiling.
Okay.
So there was not a lot of traffic safety type of policing or quality of life policing, but it was targeting certain drivers, certain profiles, or even individuals and having a traffic stop. When that lawsuit came, the police department, there was a chilling effect. And so there was a stepping back under that police chief at that time. I believe it was Flynn, and then it was Morales. And they went into a much more targeted type of policing that says, okay, we're going after mobile drug houses.
Right.
The word got out that they weren't going to chase. Chief Flynn was against the chase policy because he said it costed the lives of citizens and officers. When the shift from Flynn to Morales happened, Chief Morales reinstituted, as well as the FPC and many people in the community said, chase them.
Right.
Go after them. And so you started seeing more and more crashes and incidents. There were incidents happening when there was a no-chase policy, but you know how it is.
Episode 2, Representation Matters, Why Teachers of Color Are Essential for an Inclusive Education System. Here's an eye-opening statistic for you. In Milwaukee, more than 67% of the teachers are white, while more than 90% of the students are of color. This is a bit of a mismatch, right? Research is telling us that students thrive both academically and behaviorally when they see more teachers who share their background. The catch? We've got a shortage of teachers of color. But don't worry, I've got some awesome guests on board to chat about solutions. Contributing to a great conversation, Anthony McHenry, CEO of Milwaukee Academy of Science, Rodney Link Jr., CEO of Milwaukee Excellence, and Jennifer Lopez, CEO at Karman Schools of Science and Technology.
I had the honor and privilege of having a black principal when I was in my elementary school. I went to Frederick Douglass Elementary School on 38th. And Concordia, really sad that it's no longer open. And I had a dream that I was going to open that school back up, like when I came back. It was the whole thing. But Mr. Thompson, Principal Thompson, made it so I was able to see myself as someone that can do this role. Mm-hmm. And I believe, as Jennifer states, when we sit in these positions and get results for students and fight tirelessly for them, they're going to say, oh, I can do that as well. And I think that is something that is the profound impact. I think we need great teachers of every race inside all schools. Mm-hmm. The profound impact that a teacher of color does for a student is they can see themselves doing that now. And I think that's the part that is missing sometimes, and missing the sense of, like, we are the bearers of knowledge. We can teach our own communities. I think the last thing I'll leave you with on this one is, when we used to, they said before integration, right, we used to control the church, the stores, and the books, right? Education, so before 1954, Brown v. Board. We lost some of this cultural capital of seeing ourselves as the bearer of knowledge, as the person that's saying, hey, you are going to give me this knowledge, and I can give knowledge to one another as well. And that's where I think we have to get back, and we're fighting very hard to do that. Mac and MAS, they just put on, they put on a great, you know, diversity conversation around bringing people back into teaching, because I believe, and I think you are doing a great job here too, because people don't know what's at stake right now for the city of Milwaukee if we don't get more individuals that look like us teaching our students.
Right, right. And then, you know, you look at, you know, we've all seen the stats and all this, the education gap between Black and white students, brown students, white students, all of those comparisons, and the gap is wide. And this is one of those ways that we could start narrowing that gap, I think.
Absolutely.
Okay. So we know we need them. We know we need teachers of color. Where do we get teachers of color? Because, you know, a lot of graduates are going into other fields. They're not going into education. And to me, with education, it's more of a calling than a profession almost. But how do you get that drive?
Yeah, I want to challenge with the question just a little bit.
Okay.
It's not a small part of the equation of how to fix it.
It's a big one.
Having high-quality teachers, as Rodney said, of any race, mm-hmm. is the answer.
Right.
Right? I said this the first day that I spoke to the staff at Milwaukee Academy of Science when I was hired. We can become a great school if I'm an average CEO, but we got great teachers and great student support staff and paraprofessionals. The opposite is not true, right? It's the key. If we get high-quality teachers, kids win, right? What research is telling us is that if those teachers look like the students, the rate in which they're going to win accelerates tremendously, right? Just the fact that having one elementary kid, one teacher by the time you're in third grade mm-hmm. that's of your race increases your likelihood of graduation 13%. Like, that's mind-boggling. Just yeah. one, right? What if they have 10?
Yeah.
Right? What if all of them are African-American teachers? So it's a big part of the challenge. I think one of the things that we are doing wrong, but us, the three things that one of the things that we have in common is we're no longer just looking at traditional pipelines for teaching. Mm-hmm. What we need to do is kind of rethink how we talk about the education profession. Like, it drives me crazy when people say, oh, teachers aren't paid enough. Well, to be honest with you, that is 100% factual, right? But there are several other occupations, and quite frankly, most of the other occupations that Black people are graduating college from that are also underpaid, right? And simply, we can't pay our teachers worth, right? I'd give all of them $1 million because right. that's the work they're doing. But the point is that this is a career that you can have a really, really quality life if you become a teacher and if you choose to do something beyond that in education as well. So I think we just need to change the messaging mm-hmm. so that kids aren't constantly hearing that teaching is such a difficult job and it's a low-paying job. People can create a great life for themselves mm-hmm. in the education space. But the other part of it is we just can't depend on colleges to push out all of the teachers. And so I say to anybody who has a degree or is pursuing a degree, whether it's in education or not, you should really consider this, right? You're not going to find a job that's going to be as fulfilling as helping mm-hmm. young people chase their dreams and their goals, right? And so
Episode 3, Living the Sober Life Mentally, Physically, and Spiritually. We dive deep into a program that's making a real difference for women who have been through some tough times. And I'm talking about real trauma. Joining me are Nancy Yarbrough, who is the executive director of Fresh Start Learning, Angela Clements, and Darlene Dyson. These ladies are bringing the real talk, laying it all out with openness and transparency. The podcast takes us on their journey and shows how far they've come.
The first time I was inviting parents, and by me being an advocate, when I heard the title, Living Sober, I thought it was like recovering like you. So that is why I wanted to participate and have some of the families come so they could be comfortable just to support them. But in the midst of me going to that group thinking I was supporting parents, I became a person that was interested in, wow, this is me. It's not so much of about addiction, what I thought the title was, mm-hmm. it was more about the mindset and change of way of thinking. And then in that midst, I realized I probably was one smoke away from being where they're at if they weren't telling the truth of how they got there. I was really in those situations, not knowing that's where it would have led to, why you thinking that it couldn't be you. So I was excited when she had it again, like, sign me up. I didn't even really think about parents at the time. I was thinking about myself. So I did still pass the information on, but it was personal this time, right, and the urgency. So.
Okay. Well, if you will allow me, let me go a little deeper with you.
Okay.
What were some of the things that came out that you were like, okay, I'm struggling with this. I need to explore more of this. What was going on in your life?
This is the honest truth. I don't even think I shared it in group yet. I was going to do it later on. I realized how much I hated myself.
Really?
In the midst of me always saying, I'm strong, I'm this, and the things I was doing in life, mm-hmm, I put myself up there like all of these qualities and all these men and what they had. And then in that midst of breaking down in those cycles, I realized I hated myself versus thinking I loved myself by the choices I was making. So that was like an eye-opener to me, like, wait a minute, you mean to tell me all these years I'm up here living like this and that, and in actuality, I don't even care about myself. So then I had to learn that if I'm out here helping others, this is something I definitely need to seek, because hurt people hurt others.
Right.
But then I want to be the answer to somebody else's problem. So therefore, I had to figure out, now I'm a problem. So, yeah.
Okay. So what are some of those choices you were making?
Like knowing the men's wasn't good enough for me,
uh-huh,
and yet and still making excuses why I should still be there. As in, okay, he might cheat, but he got a lot of money.
Mm.
He may call me out my name, but he pay my bills, take care of my kids. I kept settling,
Come on.
I kept tolerating. So then once I knew my worth, by taking these classes, I started figuring out who I really was and who I could be. All that stuff was falling off like dead skin.
So, I like that.
What was that aha moment?
When I heard so many women at the table talk about what led them to a drug addiction,
mm-hmm,
and then I said to myself, that broken heart will get you to that point. And I'm just one.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our review of season 8 of the 411 Live.
Even the mighty might not see it coming. It's pre-diabetes, and it captures 1 in 3 adults. But you can escape. Take the 1-minute pre-diabetes risk test to know where you stand and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Hi. I'm your retirement fear. But don't be scared. You're still in pre-retirement.
Does that mean I have more time to plan?
Precisely. Here, this is pretirement.org.
Retirement savings options? Potential tax breaks?
Ooh.
This isn't scary. I'm doing it.
You got this.
Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan.
Welcome back to our look at season 8 of the 411 Live. Let's go to episode 4, Black Women Working to Provide Affordable Housing in Milwaukee. This episode should light a fire under you to get you involved and make a positive impact in your community. The city of Milwaukee set aside $15 million from the Federal American Rescue Plan Act, or ARP, for a housing program to renovate vacant houses and turn them into affordable housing. Well, the city threw out a call for developers. And my guests, Adrienne Hunter, Anita Clinton, and Jennifer Webster, a CEO, a marketing strategist, and a new real estate agent, along with 3 others, didn't just sit back. Nope, they rolled up their sleeves and turned their vision into action, becoming developers. You know, you will be an inspiration to others. You will be role models. How do you look at that, or how does that hat fit?
So I didn't consider it from that perspective until once we posted it, people started saying it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really interesting because I was more concerned, if concerned is the word, with the fact that it was 5 women, right, and a man, but 5 women, and five African-American women, so let's be clear, and the stereotype that we can't work together, that we can't get along. And so for me, it was more focused, I was more focused on, okay, let's make sure that we do what we can do to keep this thing together, to deliver at the very end. And then I think that it's just an added benefit that we may be become mentors to other people that are looking like, man, you know, if they can do this, we can probably do this too. And so I think that's really cool.
And you're business people, so I'm sure that you have, you know, your little agreement among you, you know, so everything's on paper. So down the line, you won't go, well, you told me this and, you know, that kind of thing. You know, you everything's in place. Right?
It just makes sense.
Yeah.
And once you've done business before and hit a few hurdles and had to jump over a few hurdles or ran and fell into a few potholes, you know that any good business venture requires a good infrastructure and legal structure. Yeah. And if you're offended by that, you're not ready. And so once you've been accomplished in business, you know that let's put it on paper. And then you understand, too, that when you're moving in business, it's a live document. That means that there's going to be a time where we have to come back to the table and modify the agreement. But when you have the right people at the table, and if you're careful about being a great student, you're okay with that.
Yeah.
If offense kick in, you're not ready.
Yeah.
And so,
Episode 5, Grieving Fathers, Overcoming the Stigma of Internalizing Pain. You've probably heard the heartbreaking saying that no parent should have to bury their child. Unfortunately, when it does happen, the grief is unimaginable. My guest, Kevin Tarkington, the founder of Fearless Fathers, shines a light on something important. He points out that fathers often get overlooked when it comes to dealing with the loss of a child. This episode is all about recognizing the pain fathers go through and giving them the space and support they need to grieve.
A lot of times with fathers, we all know, growing up as men, you're always told to be strong, you know, suck it up, you get through this. And that is good, you know, it keeps positive, but it's a negative connotation about men holding their feelings and being able to express themselves. So they internalize their feelings. So we move forward on to adulthood, and then expressing their feelings about certain things is not always as easy because you expect them to be strong, brave, and get through it. And then you go through grief and you lose a child.
Yeah.
You know, what do you do?
Yeah.
You know, how do you express yourself as a male?
Right. And I think, you know, we say women seem to get more attention. It may be because the men are not being vulnerable to show that they need some healing. You know, they need
that. And the reason they're not being as vulnerable is because of what they've been told and how they've been expressing the impression that they give as being men, which is not wrong. However, as I always say, men have feelings too. We just have to get those out and talk. Women, as you can see, they're easy to express themselves. You're expressive people.
We are. We are.
So you expect that. But with men, fathers, we have to remain strong. We have to give that persona as being strong.
And the grief is just as deep.
Mm-hmm. That's when I came up with Fearless Fathers, going through my own grief and being able to notice that we need to get something out there for men who feel and felt the same thing that I felt when I lost my child.
Let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay.
You lost your daughter.
I lost my daughter.
About how long ago?
2016.
Okay.
Her name is Ebony. And
tell me about Ebony.
Okay. Ebony is a beautiful soul,
yeah,
wonderful person, loved people, and loved being around people. And there's so much more to talk about. I mean, we all who lost a child can talk all day about our child and our children.
Right.
But my experience with that is I lost her due to complications through non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. I lost her in my home that I happened to come into a room on a Sunday after church and find her unconscious. So in that instance, I immediately felt myself being a different person. And I knew at that time that I wasn't going to be able to get through this without God, one, and then two, without some other assistance. So what I did was I sought out some assistance through a therapist early on, and which was good time being, but I felt I needed more. And then what I did was reach out to an organization called the Compassionate Friends, which is an organization that works with parents that lost a child. parents, grandparents, I should say, as well. And I went through that, and I attended a couple of sessions. And when I went to my first session, I was one of two guys that was there. So in the sessions, you know, each person is going around talking about their loss of their child. And it's very—
Episode 6, Northwest Side CDC, Creating Economic Business Growth Opportunities. If you're on the lookout for some solid guidance and resources to kickstart and grow your own business, you'll like this podcast. I'm chatting it up with Willie Smith, Executive Director of Northwest Side Community Development Corporation, and we're revealing how his organization offers businesses the support they need through coaching and funding. But here's the kicker. Willie's got some valuable advice for you, too. He's all about emphasizing the need to rethink your strategies as your business takes off.
You hear all of these stories about Milwaukee and just a number of the different areas where we're lacking in comparison to comparable cities throughout the country. And, you know, oftentimes, and even on the social service side, I won't go down this road too far, but I feel like, you know, we've succeeded admirably at what we've tried to do with our people, with, you know, a lot of the social services and things that we've provided. And I say that because I feel like what we've done is assisted people with surviving. Mm-hmm. There has been no effort, in my opinion. There might be a few out there, so I won't say at all, but oftentimes, the majority of programs and such are designed for people to survive, not for them to thrive. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, as a people within this city, that's about where we are. It's survival. So we've done that. But the catch with that is you have to keep doing it.
Right.
You have to keep, you know, kind of feeding the monster, if you will, and, you know, kind of keep the machine going so that you can keep these people surviving where, you know, what if we were looking at things in a little bit differently? What if we not only tried to assist a person with obtaining a job or with getting a business loan for their business, but we also look beyond that? I mean, if you're, you know, if your business is making, you know, $500,000 a year, what about shooting for $5 million per mm-hmm. year? And what does that look like? And, you know, when folks begin to think along those lines, it changes what they see as potential for themselves and their business.
Right.
So we try to, you know, work with businesses in that fashion and, you know, bring partner organizations in. It's not just Northwest Side CDC. So the one thing that we're not is an organization who believes in silos. We collaborate with a ton of different lending institutions, much like our own, mm-hmm. and banks as well. So, you know, the goal is to just do more. You know, how much more effective are we if we're collaborating and, you know, using partners to make things happen?
Well, you know, for a lot of people, they just need somebody for that encouragement.
Exactly.
You know, they see this much. They need somebody to kind of open their eyes a little bit and see the bigger picture.
Exactly.
I like that.
Yeah. And the obstacles that people believe are there, I don't necessarily buy that either. The money, now, people think the money is the problem.
Right. And I'm gonna stop you there because you said, I wrote this down. You said change the mentality.
Yep.
Move from that survival and that downtrodden mentality.
Yeah.
Right.
That is rather prevalent in Milwaukee and in a lot of communities where people just don't feel like they can move beyond where they are, mm-hmm. you know, so they operate with that mentality.
As you can see, the 411 Live is all about diving into a variety of interesting topics. And trust me, we've only scratched the surface in these episodes. I encourage you to listen to the full episode, so watch it on YouTube. Oh, and don't forget to hit that subscribe button. We'll highlight the remaining Season 8 episodes next time. The 411 Live is a nonprofit organization, so if you'd like to support us, go to our website, the411live.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Beverly Taylor, and this is the 411 Live. Real people, real talk. God bless. If you would like to check out past episodes, there are many ways. Go to your favorite podcast platform. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Like and watch us on Facebook. Watch and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And if you have suggestions for future episodes, go to our website, the411live.org. Thank you.
We'll be right back.